We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Hello, I'm Cleta Mitchell. And I want to welcome you to this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. It's our podcast from the Election Integrity Network about all things having to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how they're often not run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. And we're very honored to have as our guest today a woman who you've met before, who joined us a few months ago when we were in Michigan for our Michigan Statewide Election Integrity Summit, Patrice Johnson. And Patrice founded an organization after 2020. And I'm going to let her tell you about what PIME stands for. I think it's Pure Integrity for Michigan Elections. Isn't that right, Patrice?
That's right. Yep.
And she told us all about how she got that started. And since that episode, and since that time in May with Patrice, Patrice has taken on the amazing task of building a statewide coalition of volunteers and citizens who care about election integrity. And that is the Michigan Fair Elections Coalition. So, Patrice, thank you so much for joining us. And what I want you to tell people about today is a little bit about the Michigan Fair Election Coalition, what you've done, where does that stand, and what people did before and during the election, and just sort of give us a little update on what's gone on in Michigan since May.
Well, I think in May, you had the summit here in Detroit, and I attended that, and you had graciously asked me to be a speaker. And then subsequently, some of your folks and you invited me to start the Michigan Fair Elections Coalition. So I basically reached out to a lot of folks, and so we've got a lot of groups that participate with us. We meet every Thursday at noon. We have a Zoom at noon, we call it. And it started off with, I think, maybe 24 people. And now we usually have in excess of 75 that attend.
Wow.
And it just keeps growing. We're getting new members every day. It was, you know, we'd get one or two a week. And now we're getting, you know, 5 to 10 a day. So
wow.
I'm very excited at the growth of the organization. And I was telling you before we got on air here that we had our Pure Integrity Michigan Elections monthly meeting in Stockbridge, which we do every month. And I was concerned that people would be discouraged and that they wouldn't come to the meeting. But what happened was our room was packed. We had over 80 people there, and there was more resolve than ever. So it was very encouraging. I mean, maybe it's the snow here in Michigan during the winter, but this is a resilient group. The Michiganders, when the going gets tough, these people get going. So.
Oh my, that's so good to hear, Patrice. So that was on Saturday night between after the Tuesday, November 8th election. So is that right?
Yes, yes. And the Zoom meeting that we had, the Zoom meeting had well in excess of 75 people, almost 80 people. So
I noticed that.
That's right. I think you were a big draw, to tell you the truth. But it was quite interesting because I have some wonderful people that helped me out, bless their hearts. And we had been having press people come in and without permission, they were recording our calls. So we said, okay, we're going to have to register people. So we did that the day before. So nobody could get on the call unless they pre-registered. So I thought, well, you know, maybe we'll have 15, 20 people on the call because that's a lot to ask of people, not only to read all my emails, but then to pre-register and to attend. But people scrambled around and got the word out and people pre-registered and on they came.
That's really great. Well, so I'm really gratified and it makes me feel good to hear that people are have more resolve than ever. Can you talk about, where to begin? Talk about sort of tell everybody else who doesn't live in Michigan about some of the, you know, sort of the outcome of the elections for purposes of election integrity going forward in Michigan and what we're all concerned about.
Well, that's a very
That's a depressing thought.
That's a depressing part of this conversation. The Republicans who had controlled both the House and the Senate for the past 40 years lost control. So all that is switching. All the agendas will change. And we had been very grateful to be working with the chair people of the many committees to make election integrity their top priority. And now that's going to be a harder process because election integrity doesn't register very high on the list of a lot of the Democrat folks, but we'll be pursuing that. And then the governorship stayed with the existing governor that had been pretty tough on the We the People during the COVID locking everybody down for 3 years practically. And so she was reelected Secretary of State, Attorney General, all the way down the line. But the most damaging actually was the passage of Proposition 2, because Proposition 2 basically represented a wish list for anybody that would like to undermine the integrity of elections, all the way down to now. I think it goes into effect in 45 days, but then canvassers won't be able to say, no, we doubt this election. They are now going to be, by constitutional amendment, forced to say, well, this is what the numbers say. This is what I have to certify. So it's changing them into a ministerial function. It puts taxpayer-funded drop boxes all around, and absentee voting will be increased. Voter ID, they promoted it. Let me back up a little bit. Michigan people and nationwide, 80% of the public wants voter identification. So this was promoted as a voter identification law when that was a total falsehood. And what it does now is you can present an ID, but if you don't have it, you can just sign an affidavit that you're a real person that is eligible to vote. So it was marketed very heavily to the public, and
it was really dishonest the way that I mean, it was not at all what they call, what do they call it? Protect our vote or something like that.
Yeah. Protect our vote.
Mm-hmm. And it does just the opposite. But we, as Lynn Taylor always says, in Virginia, we have the worst laws and we have to work within the laws we have until we can figure out how to do something about them. And I that was a really, when she said that on your call the other day, I was I thought, yeah, that's right. Virginia has terrible laws, and a lot of states have terrible laws. So we just have to try to figure out what we can do within them. I don't know that we don't have a lot of choice at this moment, but
we have to play the hand we're dealt.
That's right. So talk to us about do you have any incidents or stories that people reported to you? Because we did have lots and lots of people, volunteers on the ground, as well as some people who were actually election officials, I guess might have been paid by the county. But what have you heard? Are there some notable things that you've heard that were problematic, problems that people saw? And then we'll talk about anything that people saw that was somewhat gratifying or encouraging. So what are some of the things that you've been hearing?
One of the biggest issues is signature verification on absentee ballot. In Michigan, there's no reason absentee voting. And what we had, for example, I was an election inspector in Lansing, and they break the process so far apart. All our election inspectors did in that room was the ballots were already pre-opened because our legislature voted pre-processing into law a month before the election. And so they were pre-opened. We just read the number off. The person next to me verified the number, that was the number on the ballot.
The ballot number, not anything to do with identification?
No, if there was a signature on there, basically we were told that had been pre-screened by the clerk.
And that was all done behind closed doors.
Yes, there's no partisan observation with the clerk verifying. So that, I would say, that's a major issue when you have thousands and thousands of ballots coming in, some with just squiggles, some with signatures to me that looked like it was done with the same hand, as the ballot before it. But that's an issue we're going to have to address. And it's not going to get better under the current laws here that we have.
Yeah. And so that was something that you saw that people reported back to you.
People reported that back. Plus, that's what I saw firsthand as well.
Yeah.
Our county board was just that one section. We just did that one function. And then to do the adjudication, that went into another room. So there's a lot of ballots are not processed efficiently. If this were a credit card company, it would not be processing ballots with the loosey-goosey process that they have now. For example, I think, ballots are dropped into drop boxes. They're manually carried, they're transferred. There are a lot of transfers of the ballot, and they're being transferred electronically as well a lot of times. And all of that is invisible to the viewer, and to the clerk and to everybody else who wants to keep track of the process and keep it transparent.
You know, that's really an interesting point. And one of the things that I've realized is that the laws in this that grew up over the course of the last part of the 20th century were really designed to strengthen election administration and to have a system where people voted in person, being observed by representatives of both political parties who are watching each other, trying to keep each other honest. And once you start taking it away from the supervision and the protection that is created when you are voting under watchful eyes, you don't even know what's going on. You don't have any way to protect the secret ballot. You don't have any way to protect against undue pressure, partisanship in filling out the ballot. And what we, you and I both worry about, and so many others, is that we don't even know that those are real people casting those ballots.
No, we don't. You can do a lot of the process. You can register and you can vote and you can have your vote counted without ever having seen a person in Michigan now. So that's an issue. We like to think of people as being honest, but the founding fathers were very wise right from the beginning in having separation of the three, the executive, legislative, and judicial branch as checks and balances, because when one side has too much authority and too much control, the temptation is just too great to basically insert bias into the process.
That's true. So how did you feel about the whole process with the observers and the hotline and the reporting? I'm sure that, do you feel as though people were able to observe at least a good portion of the process and document and report back on what they saw?
Yes. And actually, you bring up a real good point, because there was a lot of hype ahead of time about how the election and observers and poll watchers were going to cause all this trouble. And the truth is, the election, the observers and poll challenge were very well trained, very professional. And from all the reports I saw, there were no major issues at all. One issue occurred at night, because we have pre-processing now, and the procedures are not really in place, but one of the poll election inspectors stayed until they were ready to seal the boxes for the night, because the next day they'd start all over again, and they weren't sealing the boxes. So said he wasn't leaving till they sealed them. And there was a little bit of a conflict there, but eventually they sealed those boxes and he could go home. But that's the type of thing that you need to have. You need to have honest people protecting the integrity of the elections, or who knows what would have happened to those ballots at night? Probably nothing, but who would ever know?
Well, how would you know? And well, good for him. And I would imagine that the law requires sealing those boxes if they're left unattended.
It does. There's a tendency sometimes to enforce laws that you want to enforce and not enforce laws that you don't want to enforce. And that's not how the laws are supposed to work. The laws are in place to be enforced equally.
That's really important. And, you know, that's what we found all over the country, was that we had the citizen volunteers often instructing, politely, but instructing some of the paid election officials and administrators, hey, the law says this, you have to do this. And that to me is really important.
It's very important. And it's not rocket science. A lot of people feel intimidated by the law, but we produced a report, and I think 10 pages of it were specific sections of Michigan law. So they could have that in their binders with them and say, well, no, the law says, for example, that there need to be two observers here. you know, there has to be a Republican and a Democrat watching this process right here. Or, you know, these boxes need to be sealed now. This is where the law says it, that kind of thing. So if people have the law in front of them, they can read the paragraph and it's inarguable. That's the truth. That's what needs right. to be. That's what needs to happen.
Well, you know, it's interesting because in some states I've had reports back from some of our volunteers that while at first the election officials in a particular polling place or county or whatever were very resistant to having people, having the observers, that as they were got to know them and they became more comfortable, and particularly as you had some of the volunteers showing them, hey, this is what the law says, and that they became less resistant, almost started looking at some of our people as a resource.
Yes. And we were a resource, and our people were, I mean, they were just wonderful. They were not pushy, but if asked, they answered, and they were allowed to ask questions, not to say what could happen, but they were allowed to ask questions. And by the tenor of their questions, sometimes people learned a lot of things like, what statute is this? What are you doing here?
That's great. So what do you see is the what are the next steps in Michigan? What do we need to do in Michigan? What can we help you with?
Oh, well, thank you, Cleta. That's a great offer. We are going to need to do some serious revision in terms of working. I think we're going to have to focus maybe more on litigation and less on legislation, since we don't have a governor that would. Last time, I think our governor vetoed over 100 bills. She led Michigan's history in vetoing bills. So she's not likely to pass allow any legislation through. So we're looking at federal laws and working to, for example, in December 13th, we have a hearing coming up with the Bureau of Elections, because our point is that our Secretary of State never had the authorization to join Michigan in the Electronic Registration Information Center, because that third party is prohibited by the Help America Vote Act. Secretaries of State are required to manage the state's elections, and they can't just offload it to a third party, let alone one that then isn't receptive to FOIAing, federal Freedom of Information Act, mm-hmm. transparency laws. And so that's something that we're going to press for, because we need transparency in the elections. And if you lose transparency, then anything goes. So yeah. We'll be focusing on transparency in elections and seeing that federal laws are enforced.
Well, there are some federal laws that need to be changed, like the NVRA, the National Voter Registration Act needs to be changed. We need to remove the blackout periods that where the federal law purports to tell states, I don't think they have the constitutional authority to do that, but purports to tell states that they can't clean the voter rolls for big chunks of time throughout the year, which is ridiculous. So, but we're probably not going to be able to pass a lot of legislation through Congress over the next 2 years either. So,
well, hopefully the House will put committee chairs in place that put election integrity high on priority. And at least they'll make the information known that needs to be known, and states can take action.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we need to do that. We just need to, you know, we just need to keep our wits about us and keep pushing ahead, I guess would be a way to say that. But so what will be your plan for continuing with the coalition? We all continue to have your meetings and continue to keep getting more and more people involved and in the process.
Yeah, I think if anything, the resolve is greater now,
right?
Because there is such an opportunity for improvement.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's a good way to look at it. Well, Patrice, look, you're a true heroine, and you just worked so hard, and you've done such a wonderful job. I wish everybody could see the creative ways that you communicate with your. With your volunteers and with your coalition, you really have a very keen way of putting catchy graphics and titles, and everybody should learn from you how to communicate with others. You're really good at that.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you.
Well, it's very impressive. But I hope that you will keep building and growing. And we are going to do the same thing in other states, add states where we haven't had coalitions, because as we all believe, I think it's fundamental to everything we care about in our country to have honest elections and to have elections that where only legal votes are counted and that they're all counted equally, and where voters and groups of voters are treated the same. I know you had a big problem in Michigan on the college campuses where tax dollars were being spent to have registration and voting all at the same place and on the college campuses.
Yeah, the issue there is that it needs to be fair and equal to everyone. And when you only recruit, when you put intense efforts into recruiting people on campus to vote, and those are tax dollars being spent for that, you are inserting bias into the process, and it's not fair. And one of the things we need to really figure out is we had people registering to vote and then voting into like 10 o'clock at night here on college campuses. And that's an awkward thing to address, because maybe those people were in line.
Oh, right.
One of our captains, leaders in Ann Arbor, Washtenaw County, said they were there and they were telling students, I'm sorry, it's, you know, you can't get in line now. It's after 8 o'clock. You can't register to vote now. You know, you can register and vote in the next election.
Right.
We have to cut it off somewhere simply to keep things fair. Otherwise, when one party thinks they're losing, they stay.
Just keep voting.
They just keep getting people to vote. Yeah.
They just keep rounding people up. Yeah. Well, we have a lot of work to do, don't we?
We have a lot of work to do, lots of opportunity. I want to thank you, Cleta, because the way you have helped people share information from state to state, and providing information and training and basically letting people know that we're not alone. And yes, these are the laws and this needs to be done. And here's what's happening over here. It's made an enormous difference to people, because it's such an educational process.
Yes.
Most of the people in our organization were not involved before 2020. They got involved when things just seemed to smelled wrong.
So. They did. And we just have to keep working, but it's only because of people like you, Patrice, that any of this is possible. So just really thank you from the bottom of my heart. And on behalf of everybody who cares about the future of our country, thank you.
I want to give a shout out to the people in the counties, because we've got Michigan has 83 counties. And so far now, Michigan Fair Elections has leaders in 49 of them.
Wow.
Which I'm happy about. And they are very active and they're coming up with creative solutions. And they're learning to get to know their clerks, and the clerks are getting to know that we're good people trying to ensure election integrity. And it's all good.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Patrice. You're such an encouraging person and a great leader, and we appreciate all that you do. And that's the end of this episode. We hope that you'll subscribe to Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, or subscribe to our podcast. Share it with your friends. We have to keep growing this movement. And join us again for our next episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, become part of the Election Integrity Network.